This is an ABC podcast.
Tony Attwood returns to Conversations today. Tony is a clinical psychologist and one of the world's leading experts in Asperger's syndrome. Asperger's is now a reasonably well-known form of autism. People with Asperger's tend to find complex social situations confusing and sometimes distressing. They tend to focus intensely on the things that interest them. They have difficulty reading subtle cues in conversation, and they have a strong preference for routine and consistency. So, what happens when that person gets together romantically with a non-Aspie, someone who isn't on that spectrum, a neurotypical, as the specialists call it? How does that work? And what happens after they get married and have kids? Tony Attwood says that for all their social awkwardness, people with Asperger's do have some compensating strengths. They tend to be steadfast and loyal. They're likely to have complete mastery of their special interests. And in the courtship phase, they can be powerfully and intensely romantic. Welcome back, Tony.
What a lovely description. I think that should be the new diagnostic criteria.
Yes, well, the example I give, and we talked about this last time you were here, was Mr. Darcy, I think, from Pride and Prejudice, who you sort of did a diagnose. If you can diagnose a fictional character, he seemed to present as a classic sort of Asperger's lover, if you like.
Indeed. Socially clumsy, but endearing.
Endearing, indeed. How easy or difficult is it with someone with Asperger's to form friendships in the first place?
This is one of the first things that we look for, is a difficulty making and keeping friends. Sometimes being very shy and introverted and withdrawn and on the periphery of social occasions. Or they're what I call Italian drivers. They don't see the signals, the red light to stop, the no tailgating signs. They're very intense, and it's the intensity and intrusive nature is abrasive to other people. So they're then rejected, but then disappointed that I want to have friends, but they keep pushing me away.
Yeah, yes, because I suppose it's seen as a lack of courtesy, when it's not, in fact. It's just an inability to read the signals of those social cues.
It's important to recognise it's ignorance rather than being rude. So the person needs guidance rather than criticism.
Would many people with Asperger's, like many people with more classic forms of autism, just rather be left alone anyway to begin with?
I think it's more a question of needing solitude throughout the day. Can cope with socialising for a short period of time, but do so with intense intellectual energy and effort, and do it successfully. But it's what I call Cinderella at the ball at midnight. They can do it for a while, then the wheels fall off, and they then have a social migraine, and I just don't want to talk to anyone.
I've had social migraine many times in my life. I'm just thinking, even though I might not be on the spectrum in that sense, might a person with Asperger's find it even harder than most to, I don't know, what's the phrase, put themselves out there in a dating sense?
Yes, because they've haven't had many interpersonal experiences. They've observed, but they need knowledge. And the way they get knowledge is often by watching Hollywood movies, which gives you the script, the flowers, the chocolates, the phrases. But the trouble is, the moment that couple get married, the credits come up and you've no idea what to do next.
Are you serious? Many people with Asperger's, they treat movies like they will study a movie for that social script.
Absolutely. And soap operas too. Because if you want information on people, but you're not included, then in a voyeuristic way, you watch films, and that gives you, whether it be fiction or movies, information on how to have a romantic relationship.
If that person is keen to start dating, what are some of the things that give the dating game, if you like, that extra layer of difficulty?
I think it's reading the signals of not to be too intense, I think, is one of the problems there. But it's also an inherent feature that can become more important later on, of knowing the thoughts and feelings of your partner, especially when they need compassion, affection, consoling, whereas the person with Asperger's may be very good at their work, their practicality, but they then give a practical solution, where in fact that person just wants you to listen in a sympathetic way.
Is it harder for the person with Asperger's to read both attraction in another person's eyes and an absence of attraction at the same time?
This is a major problem. It's flirting. And if you've got someone who has great difficulty reading body language, the most subtle and complicated body language is in flirting. And it's often done very badly.
Is it worse for men than women in these cases?
I think it is. Women have their own issues because there is a certain expectations of how you're expected to behave. One of the things I find with the women with Asperger's, they've often have low self-esteem and feel they're not worthy of a quality relationship and become attracted to those who may not be good for them. And I see a series of inappropriate relationships because of a lack of self-esteem.
Does a woman in such situations, would she be a target for manipulation then?
She's a target for manipulation and date rape because she hasn't got a group of friends to check out character. She's not good with that radar of spotting character, may not recognise that this is not a good place to be and there's alcohol here, etc. And the person tends to take on board what they say, not their intentions, and so can be in very inappropriate situations. So often when I talk to women with Asperger's, rape has been an experience.
Men with Asperger's, when they're trying to flirt, if that's indeed what they're trying to do, or trying to make that connection with a woman, they're going to very likely say something entirely awkward or wrong or something that goes over badly, if you like.
It does. One of the issues is emotional maturity. This is someone intellectually is PhD Nobel Prize winning, but they've got the emotional maturity of a 15-year-old. Ah. And so this can be quite embarrassing at times.
So there's that's a factor that's working against that man who has Asperger's. What are some of those other factors, though, that might make him quite attractive to
women? People fall in love with an Aspie, otherwise it would have died out years ago. So I think in society and evolutionary terms, many advantages in terms of their knowledge, and what may be appealing is their expertise in a particular area, their honesty, integrity, their loyalty in a relationship. Maybe boring for some, but there is something that is attractive about someone who is socially needy. So you're getting two people together, often someone, the neurotypical, who is socially skilled, what I call an extreme neurotypical, gifted and talented in working out the minds of other people, can then get into the mind of the person with Asperger's and see the heart, not the behaviour. And that makes a difference.
Oh, so a kind woman in that situation might be able to see and love the vulnerability that's there.
Indeed. Often that partner comes from the caring professions. So obviously when I see children for a diagnosis, the question is, does the apple fall far from the tree? And often that's the case. So dad may be engineer, accountant, medicine, information technology, and mum's a social worker, nurse, psychologist, etc.
How about the kind of degree of romantic attention a man with Asperger's might be able to give to a partner, a potential partner?
Part of Asperger's is having intense interests, usually for knowledge and information, but it becomes a person, and it's called stalking. And what the person may do is take a fascination. So when he says to be there at 7:30, he's there at exactly 7:30 with the flowers and the chocolates. And he almost has a script which can be very appealing, but also has a sort of what I call a Peter Pan charm. I mean, he's still got his train set. Isn't that cute? And then when you're married, he spends all his money on his train set. So all those sorts of things can occur.
So that level of attentiveness, punctuality, steadfastness.
Yes.
That I'm here for you. I've done everything right. I've thought through the whole thing beforehand. I've given this so much preparation and thought. That can be quite touching.
It can, and it can be hard to resist because you have a feeling that the relationship is going to be wonderful because they so much adore you.
How do expressions of affection work for someone with Asperger's or an Aspie? By the way, is that seen as derogatory or not derogatory? Or how does that word sit these days?
It originally came from Leanne Holiday Willey, who has Asperger's syndrome. And she used it as a short form, Aspie, in a positive sense. So it's not a derogatory term. I hope it never becomes a derogatory term. Mm. So that's where Aspie comes from.
Oh, so back to my question then, how do expressions of affection work for an Aspie? Do they need them? Do they need that I love you, the hug, the kiss, and all that?
This is a big problem. I will talk to couples and the neurotypical wife will say, but he never says, I love you. And then he turns around and says, but I did. When? on the day we got married. Why would I need to say it again? Have you got Alzheimer's? Have you forgotten? I mean, why should I buy you dying flowers? Why should I squeeze you? How does squeezing you solve the problem?
How does a statement like your need for me to tell you I love you comes from probably incipient Alzheimer's? How does that go over as a kind of...
Well, it's not a good one, because the issue then for the neurotypical is a sense of emotional loneliness.
Yes,
that
yes.
They're not reading the signals of needing just a word or two of affection. Very good at practical problems, and in fact that is the source of their employment, is that they are very good at solving problems, but not emotional problems.
So is marriage particularly attractive to someone with Asperger's then? Because that you there pointed about at that moment where you exchange vows. Mm. The vow is clearly what's important here to the Aspie, if you like. Is
it
that
is,
right?
But they're looking for someone to replace mum with unconditional love and affection, and to organise, plan my life, steer me through social situations, sometimes to do the budgeting, all those sorts of things. It's a question of, I think, sometimes the person with Asperger saying, who do I need? I need someone who's socially skilled, sees through the facade of the Asperger syndrome to the real me. And as soon as they spot that person, they pursue them until the person ends up not being able to resist the advances.
Sometimes someone needs to be needed, and that, I suppose under those circumstances that can work out quite well. But that seems like it needs to be clearly understood. Then.
It does. It's needed from both sides. And that can be a problem of the balance of the need and the support. And today we use the term partnership rather than husband and wife. And there's an expectation of a balance, and that's difficult.
Hugging, that's a problem then. Hugging's a big problem sometimes.
It is, and kissing and gestures of affection and things that neurotypicals feed on and enjoy and expect in a relationship. Here, I use the phrase cactus versus a rose, where the Aspie is a cactus, and affection is a cup of water a month with a prickly exterior to protect a vulnerable interior, but is okay to be some distance from other cacti. And I say, but your wife is a rose in a rose garden, and she needs mulching and tenderly looking after in an English country garden, otherwise she wilts and dies.
Why might sex present a bigger problem for Aspies than for the rest of us, Tony?
A problem in many ways, sometimes too much or too little. Sometimes too little, as I was talking to a couple, and the wife was in tears and said, we haven't made love for 4 years and so on. And he turned to her and said, why would we want to make love? We've got enough children. So it's recognizing issues of intimacy that can be a problem. Or by not having had many relationships, but having an intellectual curiosity, the source of information on sexuality can be pornography. And that leads to certain expectations of what to do in intimacy, which may not be agreeable to the neurotypical.
Oh, my. So this is the movie script once again. You look at movies, and in this case, it might be pornographic movies to get that script.
Yeah, these are the X-rated movies, and not really understanding that this is, in many ways, I suppose, fiction.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, right. And you wouldn't necessarily be able to perceive the weirdness of pornography, I suppose, and how strange it is in some ways.
Well, it's not a sexual documentary.
No.
Or a how-to guide.
I suppose this raises the whole question of, I think, what Helen Garner sometimes calls eros. And when she talks about eros between people, it's that very old idea the ancient Greeks talked about, the idea of a... It needn't be erotic, actually. Eros needn't be that. It's that kind of quickening of spirit where you read one another very quickly, and it's like meeting your perfect dance partner, and you're dancing together very, very quickly.
Yes.
But with your mind, or with your voice, and with your body language, and all those things.
It's becoming one. It's resonating. It's harmonic resonance in terms of emotionality. But this also covers areas of happiness, and often the person with Asperger's has great difficulty resonating with the happiness of others and finds that actually quite uncomfortable, and wanting people to be emotionally with a very limited range because of not knowing how to be euphoric with other people, to be of one mind and have a synchrony of movements, can be very difficult.
Nonetheless, can there be those moments, like with Mr. Darcy, when he makes his second proposal to Elizabeth Bennet and says absolutely the right thing that chimes with her so profoundly in a way that no one else ever will for the rest of her life?
Yes, and it must happen, otherwise they would never get married, have a partner. And sometimes there can be almost an unexpected flash of inspiration. But for the NT, neurotypical, they're wanting those moments every day. And they're yearning for what happened 5 years ago because it was wonderful.
We neurotypicals must seem really weird in that way. Like, why do you want to keep doing the same thing again and again and again when you've already made the case? It's like going back into court to make a case every day, I suppose.
Yes, I proved the point. Yes. Have you forgotten? Well, we have other things to do. I've got to fix the fridge.
So romance is like something... It's a process that you resolve in the end, and there's an agreement or some kind of a contract that's entered into, and after that you didn't renegotiate the contract.
Yeah, this is one of the problems when I talk to the couples. The neurotypical wife will say, he was fantastic courting, but the day we got married, I saw the other side.
What happens?
He won the prize, he didn't have to try, and he went off with his train set.
So there aren't really enough examples then of the kind of a script, if you like, a movie script of, you don't see this. I'm just thinking as you say this, how many movies really are about the business of marriage? I think Alain de Botton was talking about this too. Almost none.
And mature relationships too, because it's not cool. It's not exciting. But it's needed because that becomes a source of information for those with Asperger's syndrome.
Right. So they don't have the movie script to look to for the everyday ins and outs of a marriage that's been conducted or a partnership that's been conducted for a long while. Someone might be extremely successful in work, someone with Asperger's, but not at home. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
It's two different environments. And what we find is the person with Asperger's may be able to socialize, engage, process information socially and emotionally at work. But when they come home, they're absolutely exhausted and the shutters come down and you see a different side. It's what I call Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There's almost two characters. And there's been a phenomenon called the Cassandra complex. Cassandra had the gift of prophecy, but the curse when no one believe her. But then the neurotypical talks to people about their partner's challenges socially. They say, no, he's the life and soul of the party. He tells such good jokes. He's great. But you don't see him when he leaves the party.
You mentioned there the desire for the SP to fix problems when sometimes, if it's a woman and is the neurotypical, what just wants to be listened to. I'm just reminded of this classic scene in a really underrated movie called White Men Can't Jump, where Woody Harrelson's in bed with his girlfriend and she says to him, honey, I'm thirsty. And he says, oh, I'll get you a glass of water. And she gets really angry with him. And she says, no, you get this so wrong. And he goes, what are you talking about? She says, you're always trying to fix things, you men. She says, I don't want you to go and get me a glass of water. I want you to empathize with my thirst right now. he gets really angry and walks away. Isn't this just really a common irritant that between men and women, maybe?
It is, but it's an amplification. When I talk to, the husband with Asperger's, I say, look, in your job, you are employed to solve problems. All you've got to do is listen. But you need to listen showing attention. You need to do what I call bovine noises. Etc. Women do this all the time to each other when they're talking. And that's what they want from their partner. So I say, look, guys, you don't have to study books. All you have to do is attentive listening, and she'll love you for it.
And it's inauthentic. It's inauthentic. That's why I think now we're talking about men and women. Actually, it's really kind of interesting in that sense too. It's like, why can't I fix the problem? I want to fix the problem. I want to fix the problem.
And that's one of the major challenges. Yeah. And the answer is, it's better to be fake than nothing at all.
You mentioned there an Aspie might have a limited amount of social energy too. Does that mean once you've partnered up, gotten married as a couple, that just the socialising will fall away that you once did?
Yeah, this is where the neurotypical may make more adjustments than the Aspie. And where previously they're often the sort of person who is energised by socialising, is gregarious, the life and soul of the party, and then realise that their partner is exhausted by it, doesn't do it easily, endures it, and so on. So they say, well, okay, we won't go out, etc. So their social life starts to become less. And this is where I say Asperger's is infectious. If you live with an Aspie, you become Aspie as a survival mechanism. You don't cope with change, you reduce sensory sensitivity issues. But social life becomes an exception, not a standard everyday experience.
If it's not diagnosed in that partner, particularly the male partner, does that mean friends are likely to fall away anyway? Just, I just can't sit next to him and do this again. I mean, if it's understood that the person has Asperger's, you can actually say, look, we need to stop talking about this now, and there's no offence can be taken.
Oh, yes.
But does that mean, you know, there's a greater reluctance for people to want to socialise with that couple as a result of the Aspie partner?
There is, because the person is at a dinner party and they can cope with an hour. And after an hour, I've known some actually fall asleep at the table, or they do everything they can to look at their watch to imply, I can't do any more. And they can't do any more. But the difficulty is their partner wants to socialise. They've only had a little bit. They've had a taste. But then it's being taken away because the person can't cope anymore.
Also, that can lead to real resentment and cracks in the marriage then at that point, can't it? Between the neurotypical person and the person with Asperger's. But if when that happens, will the person with Asperger's, is that person likely to be unaware that these cracks are appearing in the marriage?
Oh, very much so. They're often not aware of that. And so when the wife will talk about these sorts of things, it's, what? No, I haven't noticed that. And I say to the wife with NT, are you happy in the marriage? No, I have problems. And I talk to the Aspie, how are you? And they're like, oh, I'm happy. And when the wife says, I'm not, really? But you never say.
Maybe the problem here is one of assumptions. We kind of all assume that we share an ideal of love. Is that the problem here in some ways?
It is, and it's one of the things I ask, what's your definition of love? And a person with Asperger's did a beautiful one. It's a euphoric mood without logic. And I think that's so good. So it often the concept is what is love? Sometimes by practical deed, or I don't know. When I said, what is love? I don't know the correct answer. Was the reply.
Is it easier for the person with Asperger's to write that down rather than say?
Oh, this is a very valid point. I know one couple where the husband writes such exquisite poetry that his wife fell in love with his poetry. And so within Asperger's, it's a difficulty conveying your inner thoughts and feelings by speech, but can do it by music, actually by creating music or playing music or photographs or paintings and drawings. And so there are many famous artists with Asperger syndrome who have the remarkable ability to express the self and emotions and especially love through art, but not conversation.
See, right there, that confounds the stereotype. Mm. I mean, when someone is a bit artless in what they say, now these go, they're probably on the spectrum or something like that. But what you're saying confounds that. There's something wrong with that stereotype.
It is. It's making the assumption is that you can look at somebody and talk and express your inner thoughts and feelings through speech. It's through the speech that's a difficulty. But if it's to compose music, and in my clinical experience, I've known a number of famous artists, authors, playwrights, etc., who have the characteristics of Asperger's, and in their plays and in their literature, it's phenomenal in their insight into people. But it's look at me and tell me is what's difficult.
Do you know, as you say this, I'm thinking that very often I find over the years, musicians are tricky to interview by and large. They're not easy to interview. They don't seem to like it very much. These are people who can write the most, you know, profoundly moving and shattering songs, so resonant with feeling and thought and emotional reflection, all that, find the speech end of things not so easy.
But that's what the neurotypical partner falls in love with, because they see love, but it's not in the conventional way.
So what's behind the desire for a life partner then from that person with Asperger's? Is it that mother figure that they're looking for?
Yeah, and somebody who's going to guide me socially, although sometimes the guiding is, why have you kicked me under the table? You just kicked me. Why do you keep going like, why are you going shh? And it's a good joke, but you've told it before, and it's a religious joke, and you're
talking to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Exactly, yes. And not realising this is not the right context for that joke.
So this can really lead to the fractured marriage then over time, then with the kind of things you're talking about. It's very easy for this to happen between the person with Asperger's and the partner that it doesn't have it.
Yeah, and it may go on for decades, and that can be a major difficulty in terms of how do each of them cope. Often the person with Asperger's says, my wife makes expectations of me, but I don't read the signal, so how can I give it?
So then the person without Asperger's will may well bail from the marriage at that
point.
Yeah,
I'd say, well, you should know. You should. We've been together for 20 years. You should know this. And no, he doesn't. And so sometimes it can lead to a disintegration of the relationship, of living apart, either emotionally or physically.
This is Conversations with Richard Feidler on ABC Radio. On air, online, and on your mobile.
You mentioned the special interest aspect of the person with Asperger's. They're going to be into this or that, this special thing. You know, the cliche is it's cars and computers, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe there's something to that. The special interest aspect of that person with Asperger's, that might be terribly charming at the outset of a relationship. Does the charm wear off after a while within
yes,
the relationship?
Yes, indeed it does. And here, sometimes the partner says, he loves his computer more than me, or he spends more time on his computer games than with me. And so there's a sense of jealousy that can occur.
Can this lead to a kind of a secret life that the person with Asperger's has? They may conduct all these kind of secret activities that they don't care to share with that the partner in their life?
Well, I guess because they're going to say no and want them to do stupid, ridiculous waste of time like sitting together and hugging. Yes.
You found there was one partner in the UK that after the husband left, there was a special interest in cars that around the UK.
Oh, there had been during the relationship, but he was so secretive about it that when they separated and the lawyers got hold of who's going to get what, he had about 20 vintage cars stored all over the UK that she didn't know about, but actually were registered in her name. And it's almost like having a secret life. And this is where there can be a contradiction in Asperger's. Usually the person is the self-appointed revealer of the truth. They are very, very honest to a fault. But sometimes if they should lie, will lie in a way that you can't see the cracks and are incredibly believable.
Infidelity. I would imagine that infidelity would be a low-risk thing in this situation.
Indeed. And if you've had previous relationships where infidelity was a heartbreaking experience, you've got somebody who's steadfast, who's going to be there for the rest of your life and so on. And that can be very appealing, especially for bringing up children.
What about if the man in the relationship or the marriage has Asperger's and his wife then goes and has an affair? Will the man in the relationship, the man with Asperger's, feel betrayed, or will he see the rationality of her needing someone to give her a hug and a kiss and say he loves her every day?
I had this as a topic last week. And the husband is very much in love with his wife and will do anything for her happiness. And he said, if I can't give you social romantic experiences, you need it, go find it somewhere else. But I still want to be married to you.
The thing is the marriage then, the contract, if you like.
Yeah.
You began to start observing these relationships between these two cultures. It's a good way of seeing it, isn't it? Mm. It's from a very young age. Tell me about this, please, Tony.
Well, yes. My parents divorced when I was a year old, and my mother married when I was six, an engineer. And he was Aspie. And that's why I call myself bilingual, because I was brought up in an Aspie household. But I watched my mother change from the gregarious socialite to someone who withdrew from social occasions. But of course, I would listen in avidly when she would complain about her new husband to my grandmother. And I was fascinated by the stories that she would say of the lack of empathy, the lack of social life, and all the things that made him so pedantic and difficult to live with. So I learned about it very early on, and so could understand the challenges from both sides.
How was he with you?
That's a very good point. My mother, it was late, actually, only a few years ago, when my mother said, Anthony, I've just read an article in the Sunday Times about Asperger's. She said, Bernard, he's Asperger's. And I said, yes, Mother, don't you actually read my books? And then I said to my mother, Mother, I've known him for over 50 years. I can't think of a compliment he's ever given me. And my mother contemplated for about 20 seconds. She said, no, he's never given you a compliment. And the view is, if you know you're good, why should I give you a compliment?
stating the obvious.
Yes. If you got an A for that essay, well, that's it. I don't need to say any more.
How did your mother cope with having her wings clipped socially?
She managed to create a social life with her friends that she would have sort of dinner parties when she could be her true self. And this is what I'll do in counselling. I'll say, okay, who were you before you met your Aspie partner? Go back to that person. Mm. You enjoyed socialising with the girls. You'd let your hair down. You'd be silly and frivolous. Do it again.
What did it mean having an Aspie stepdad for you, for your social life as a kid?
I had to brief friends when they would come to the house. And they gave me a lot of support. But I found that I wasn't really understood or welcome. So I would go to other families where I would see different types of environment. And as my mother said, as I would walk out the door, she said, Anthony, don't wear your welcome out. And I made sure I didn't wear my welcome out. And it was seeing other families, also my grandparents, to see and feel a different atmosphere, not the tension, not the criticism, not the indifference. And that's what I did. Friendship was my psychotherapy. It was wonderful.
You said tension at home as opposed to indifference. They're two different things. What was the source of that tension? What were the kind of things that would upset your stepfather?
One of the problems of Asperger's can be emotion regulation and expression. As my mother would say, Anthony, don't upset him. We'll all suffer. So it's a bit like a minefield in a way in the home environment, that if things are done slightly out of sequence, or the sauce bottle's in the wrong place, or there's a slight delay of having to wait for something, the person can explode. Not in a way that people fear for their own safety. It's just fear for the explosion. And this is when I talk to the children of a relationship where one partner has Asperger's, is say, yes, I've been there. I've known I've had to hold what I was going to say because everyone's going to suffer, but I can't retaliate.
Well, that must have been very distressing for you as a kid, sudden explosions of rage over the sauce bottle being in the wrong place. Could your mum intervene on your behalf in such moments?
She had to make a decision of loyalty to her husband or her son, and she chose her husband. And recently she's been deeply apologetic about that.
So she said that to you then?
Yeah. She said, Anthony, you have every reason to have gone off the rails. It's amazing you didn't.
You've done all right, haven't you?
Yes. I think so. Yes.
Well, what sense of it could you make at the time as a boy?
As a child, with your parents in that sort of state, you tend to blame yourself. There's something wrong with me. And that's where friends could then act as a counterbalance to say, no, there's nothing wrong with you, etc. So I needed other people to confirm who I was.
Did your mother have to withdraw affection from you in order to be that person?
Yeah, but the first time my mother kissed me, I was nearly dead at the age of 26 in a hospital ward. And that was the first time she kissed me.
Do you see that your mother suffered at the time from this?
Yes, I think so. She very much suffered, yeah.
Did he change? Was he able to change over time, as he got older?
That's, again, a very interesting question. He could have taught Scrooge a few tricks. He was very controlling with money. My mother, very beautiful, could have been a model, had to make her own clothes. But as he got older, he became more mellow. And there was a lovely occasion where he would always get the cheapest possible functional car. And my mother said, I want a BMW. And he said, OK, you can have one. And she was in her 70s. So better late than never.
Better late than never, indeed. Was he ever diagnosed?
No. He was of a generation where it was just viewed as male.
You know, I know someone whose father was diagnosed in his 70s. And it was almost like this sigh of relief. And he was pleased with the diagnosis.
Yeah.
He went, I have Asperger's syndrome. This explains why I'm the way I am. And it led to this kind of, there's a kind of forgiveness in the diagnosis, maybe.
For the person themselves, but also their family. Because one of the things of the affection for the partner, it's also going to be the children. And their view can be, Dad doesn't love me. He loves the dog more than me. And they can feel, how do I get my father, if it's an Aspie father, to show love and affection? What have I got to do? So the children either become high achievers and are desperate to resolve the problem and may choose to marry someone similar to the father to resolve those problems. Or they say, right, I'm never going to marry anyone like that. So there's a polarisation.
We were speaking there of couples going to parties like this. I've seen a situation where it's him and her and he's now learned over time to be pretty quiet at parties, just to keep himself to himself mostly. And that actually acts as a platform for her because she's very charming and delightful and funny. And
yes.
And so he likes that too. He likes to see that in her. So that works quite well. Do you sometimes see it work quite well, this partnership? There's a kind of an interdependence, if you like, socially, that works actually not disastrously, but just the other way around.
Yes, it does. And that's what we would encourage is that, okay, for the person with Asperger's, how can you cope in a social situation of being there but not being there? And it can be done.
Do you ever feel like stepping in when you see this behaviour at a party yourself? As one of the world's leading experts to say, well, I can see what's going on here. It's fine for you to say this. Okay,
but this is when I'm cornered by someone who wants to talk about the latest technology. Sometimes I will deliberately stay there to think how long before they look at my face. They're not reading the boredom signals. How long can I keep this going as a game, really? Or I learn strategies. Oh, this is absolutely fascinating. I've learned a great deal, but I need to move on.
You know, I'm just thinking it's a bit like, you know, when if someone's at a party, they accidentally cut their finger off in the kitchen, not preparing dinner for everyone. You know, the doctor's, it's all right, I'm a doctor, I'll step in. Do you don't ever feel like going, it's okay, I'm a clinical psychologist, I'll step in and save this social situation.
I may do, actually. It may be to the wife and go up and say, I understand.
Oh.
It's not your fault.
Does it simply work sometimes to actually, if the person's understood to be asking you to say, thank you, you've said quite enough, we need to talk about something else, and I need to talk about, and I need to move on now.
Very much so. Talking to people with Asperger, they'll say, please be honest, up front. If you are subtle, I won't read it. And so this is when I'm working with couples, and I'll say to the wife, say, I need a hug, please, a number four hug. And you grade hugs according to the intensity. So I want a number four hug, please.
Well, I mean, in social situations, though, if you find yourself cornered by that person who's telling you everything about their special subject, doing the deep download, I think is the phrase, isn't it? A total download of everything they know. That person with Asperger's is not likely to be offended if you go, please, I'd like you to stop talking about that now. They won't get hurt.
Yes, as long as you're direct and not critical. Right. It's just like, that was fascinating, really enjoyed that. But I need to go. I'll see you tomorrow or whatever. Yes.
Parenting. What kind of problems does parenting raise for couples like this kind of couple we're talking about here?
Major problems. Because you have often, with an Aspie and a neurotypical, two very different styles of parenting. The Aspie style is with the child wanting to educate rather than play with the child. May be involved with discipline and consequences rather than explaining. And this is going to affect all the children, but especially the Aspie child, should they have one. And I say the parent with Asperger's and the child, they're like magnets. They either attract or repel. Now, they may attract in terms of the Aspie parent says, as Leanne Holiday Willey's father, who's an aeronautical engineer, said, look, you need to learn about reading faces. We're going on a field study to an airport to read facial expressions. And if you want facial expressions, the best place is an airport. And he said, I had to learn it. You need to learn it. And that was a wonderful sense of rapport. Or the wife says, you're from the same planet. You should understand each other. But they may not.
How about that need for affection that a child has too? That they may not get that affection that they feel they need, and they feel they, I think you say, you know, you blame yourself perhaps as a kid sometimes. How do you negotiate? What advice do you have on that?
Well, an illustration is an 8-year-old girl. And I said, with your Aspie dad, if you had a wish, what would that be? And she said, I wish he would give me a hug when I go to bed. And then I explored it a little bit further. And what was happening was that she was standing in the doorway saying, good night, Daddy. Good night. Good night. And he was on his computer and he said, good night. See you in the morning. Good night, Daddy. Yeah, it's all right. Just go to bed. But he wasn't reading the signals that she wanted a hug. And when I spoke to his wife, I said, look, can you please ensure that he gives her a hug, because he didn't see the signal, so he didn't respond. She was a little girl of 8. She didn't know quite what to say. But it then transformed her life when he now gives her a hug.
You mentioned there that the Aspie parent might be more interested in the educative side of parenting. But how do they go as teachers, by and large?
They're often attracted to teaching, not only at high school and primary school, but also at university. They're sheltered workshops for the socially challenged, where it's a cathedral for the worship of knowledge, where you're actually paid for your special interest. So they're often never leave university.
Yes, but how about having the patience and empathy to pass on that knowledge to a student or a child, if you like?
Often, if people are interested in their topic, they can be incredibly patient and supportive. And so often they are very good as a lecturer because they have enthusiasm for their topic and encyclopedic knowledge. And they want to, you see, if you're a lecturer, you're paid to be boring and give monologues. And it's great.
Nonetheless, you mentioned there with your own stepfather, the need to tiptoe around the house a bit. This is common for children who have parents with Asperger's.
It is. It is eventually understanding what topics not to go into, and also not to expect the compassion or interest in your social and emotional life. Practically changing the tire of your bicycle, fine, really good at that. But upset because a friendship has ended, well, get over it, find another friend.
Is it mostly dads we're talking about here? Do mums with Asperger's have a different set of problems?
This is another issue, because women have a certain expectation. And women with Asperger's can be superb mums. They often lack confidence, though.
Why?
Because normally you use intuition. And if you haven't got intuition to read people, you're not sure if you're doing the right thing. So often they need confirmation that they're doing the right thing. Can be remarkable guardians and supporters of the children, never wanting them to experience in school life what they experienced of bullying and teasing, very vehemently supporting them. But again, it may be the cold touch of affection rather than the genuine one. And so that's more expected from a mum. And we often find that an Aspie mum marries an extreme neurotypical dad. So it's dad who gives the affection. And so when the child is upset and falls over, who do they run to? They may run to dad, not mum.
I'm not sure there's always a compensating strength for every, you know, so-called weakness in this case, but I'm just wondering, when it comes to intuition, people operate on intuition and gut feeling are so often boneheadedly wrong about stuff. So if you're not operating on that, maybe you're more open-minded and you're more ready to change.
You said a very important word, change. Unfortunately, in Asperger's, there can be a resistance to change. What I'm looking for is motivation and guidance, because if I have a couple and they're wanting to improve their relationship, someone's got to change, and that can be a problem.
You mentioned there earlier that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. If there's one parent is an Aspie and they have an Aspie kid, and then other neurotypical kids, that's got to be complicated.
It is. One of the characteristics of Asperger's is having a favourite child who can do no wrong. And the others feel very jealous that this one has a lot of attention and so on. So it has major problems in the dynamics. And
So the Aspie parent will favour the Aspie child, is that what you're saying?
Or another one.
Right.
And in Asperger's, two's company, three's a crowd. And actually can be very good in terms of before children, BC. But as soon as children arrive, well, there's too many, I've got to retreat to my shed.
Having a favourite child, that's complicated. So does all the effort in making the marriage work then typically fall upon the non-Asperger person?
A disproportionate amount does.
And that's exhausting.
Oh, absolutely exhausting. And depressing. So quite often there's a sort of a degree of burnout, because there may not be appreciation of the sacrifices that have occurred. There's the expectation you'll do it. My mum did everything for me. You must do everything for me as my wife.
And is this a common thread you find when you're counselling couples in such situations?
Yes. Yeah.
Is Asperger's considered a kind of disability? And ought it to be so, or ought it not to be?
In certain extreme forms, it is, because it affects the quality of life and the ability to get and keep jobs. We're talking about here, in society's terms, a difference. So you've got someone who's a successful accountant, for example, or medical neurosurgeon. So as far as society's concerned, they're married, three kids, good income, and everything's great. But they don't see the challenges behind closed doors. So it's not a disability, it's a difference.
You run these relationship courses with couples. Is it just you and the couple, or do you do these courses with several couples all sitting in the same room at the same time?
It's both. But what we find when we have our, what we call our relationship minefield groups,
Relationship minefield groups?
Yes, that's what we call them. And we find that sometimes the best advice comes from other couples. And so you get people who are in the early stages of the relationship, then talking to those who've been married for 34 years and say, 40 years, what do you recommend? And they say, look, et cetera, get a social life, all those sorts of things. And they take it very seriously.
Is this, given that you've got the two couples, the two cultures there within in several couples in the same room, do they then tend to split off into their own cultures? Do they, like the Asperger's man will say something and the other guy will go, absolutely right,
oh,
buddy.
Oh, yes, yeah. For sure. We sometimes split the groups, and I usually go with the Aspie men. And one of the things I'll say is, what would you like your NT wife to know about you? I keep telling her this, and when I'm at work, I don't think about her. She expects me to send text messages and things like that. But when I'm at work, I'm at work, and that's where I stay. And then in the other room with my friend and colleague Michelle, she's talking to the neurotypical. Why doesn't he give me a hug when I need consoling and compassion? He just doesn't see it and walks straight past me and say, where's the screwdriver? So it's really trying to work out that they support each other in terms of shared issues, but then what do we do about it?
God, it's just like those arguments that used to break out in Star Trek between Mr. Spock and Bones, the Doctor. You know, good God, man, have you no feeling? That's highly illogical, sir. That kind of thing.
Well, there was another one when the Bones says, and thank God we got out of that. And he said, but there was no deity involved.
When you're doing such counselling, how crucial is the acceptance of the diagnosis of, and do people fight against that diagnosis?
Yeah, you can't get anywhere until there's acceptance. Now, you don't need a formal diagnosis, just a recognition that you have those characteristics that define who you are, and then you need to move on from that. So you don't need a formal diagnosis.
To reach that man, or particularly the man in with Asperger's, do you then have to persuade them of the logic of the need for change?
Yes, if you don't change, you're going to lose your housekeeper.
Presumably you don't say that when she's in the room.
No, I do. And she says, yes, you will. Or she'll say, look, you've got to get a diagnosis, because if you haven't got Asperger's, you're a mean bastard and I'll leave you.
So what sort of help do couples mostly need then when you're
dealing with it? It's communication. It's understanding the two different ways of thinking and culture. They're not a value system, one superior to other, but they're different. And one of the characteristics of Asperger's is problems with communication. So it's improving communication and understanding. It's not rocket science. We know what to do.
When a diagnosis comes many years into a relationship, how is that realization met? Is it met with the kind of happy thing? Oh, my God, that explains so much. Oh,
again, a good question. Sometimes the neurotypical will say, I always thought that he's like that because he chooses not to do it, that he won't do it. Now I know that he can't do it. And that takes the wind out of your sails, because there's a view, I can find the key. He did it in courtship. He can do it again if I can just find that magic to get him to do that. And then realize, no, that was the fake part. What I see now is the real part.
Oh. So at least you can create some space with the diagnosis for compassion and insight.
Yes, but it's going to take time to get that. And the person with Asperger says, oh, great. But I then say, but that's not an excuse. You can't say, no, we're not going to go socialising because I've got Asperger's. No, your wife needs to go and you must go. We also do some, we fight Aspie with Aspie. We'll say, right, you will give your wife two compliments a day. And you'll write it in the diary, and next week we'll see the two compliments that you gave your wife.
So was it quite touching then when the man with us was just, it's time for our scheduled compliment. You look particularly lovely today, something like that. Or you did that, you did something very nice today, or did something very well today, something like that. Do you give them signals to use?
Yes. I think it has to be. You have to be able to see it rather than read it in the facial expression, etc. And you've got to say, I want or I need. Otherwise, you won't get it.
And in social situations, do you give the partner the signal to the ASPE person, like a hand signal or something that they can use across the table?
It's like traffic lights. It's basically a red light stop.
Right.
Well, that's enough. So often the NT will come to the rescue of the boring conversation and just say to the husband, oh, well, just come along with me into the kitchen for a moment to rescue the person who is stuck in the corner.
Is there any kind of semaphore you can give them? Like, you know, like hand signals or something like that?
Yes, that thing, exactly. And that's what's needed. Oh, sorry, et cetera. And then interrupted and they're okay.
How many of these partnerships work out in the long term?
Surprisingly many. Actually, the divorce rate is quite low. And for both partners, they're very keen on maintaining the relationship. So divorce will occur, yes, but not as much as I would have thought.
As always, Tony, this has been completely fascinating talking to you and hugely enjoyable as well and fascinating to sort of get this insight into these two different cultures and what happens when they interact. It's just amazing. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you, Richard.
On air, online, and on your mobile. You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler on ABC Radio. All our conversations are available on the ABC Radio app. Or go to abc.net.au/conversations.
I spoke to Professor Tony Atwood in 2017. Tony is a clinical psychologist, and he's been credited with writing The Bible, as it's known, on Asperger's syndrome. All the details are on our website, abc.net.au/conversations. And the links are there also to my other conversations with Tony, because we've had a few with him over the years. I'm Richard Feidler. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast of Conversations with Richard Feidler. For more Conversations interviews, please go to the website abc.net.au/conversations.